Welcome everybody to a deep dive into Unity UI. My name is Charlie Hellman. I'm a Seattle local, and I'm really excited to be here. I want to give a shout out to Be My App for inviting me to come give this talk. I've had a lot of fun preparing it. I hope you guys enjoy it. So let's screen share here and take a dive into the presentation. All right. So first, I'll say a little bit about myself. I've been working in Unity, as you can see, for a long time. In the last 4 years, I've worked at two big game studios, the first being a company called Camouflage. They're an indie game studio out of Bellevue who launched a Kickstarter that was funded and have since been working on a game for the last 3 years, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a second. Last year, I went and joined a company called Wizards of the Coast. You might know them for games like Magic the Gathering or Dungeons and Dragons, where I've been working on some pretty cool but unannounced stuff inside Unity. Now, at Camouflage, as the lead UI engineer, I shipped three titles and also ported the game to four different platforms on mobile, on PC, and also on PlayStation 4. Now, the game we were making at Camouflage was called Republic. It's sort of a stealth action narrative game set in a high-tech prison where you're helping this girl, who you can see hiding behind the bookshelf here. You're trying to help her escape the grasp of a sort of totalitarian regime by hacking into their network, jumping between security cameras, you know, activating distractions to keep guards away from the girl. So, you know, being a game so heavily about hacking, there's a lot of UI. And so I had a lot of work cut out for me when it came to maintaining UIs that were already there or building new ones that came out as features for new episodes. So UI is my jam, and I'm really excited to tell you guys all about it. So what are we going to talk about? First, we're going to do a quick overview of the UI frameworks that are out there for building UI in Unity, and then I'm going to cover some of the pros and cons of each of those frameworks, and finally give a recommendation of why I think Unity UI is a pretty good choice. Then I'll give a demo of the Unity UI workflow. And show you some of the basic components, go over some of the gotchas that tend to trip up people who are new to Unity UI. Next, I'll cover must-have add-ons, actually interspersed throughout the talk. I'm going to be mentioning some of the add-ons that I use day-to-day and that you might want to consider if you're working in UI a lot. Then I'll speak to architecture, techniques for building your UIs in a way that are more maintainable, more modular, so that you don't want to tear your hair out, you know, when you come back to something 6 months after working on it. And then if I have time, I want to cover anchoring, ways to make your UIs stretch to still be pixel perfect on multiple platforms and multiple resolutions. So let's talk about UI frameworks. I can't really mention this without bringing up NGUI, which has been the industry standard for such a long time. There's hundreds and hundreds of games built in NGUI and Unity. Republic was one of them. All of our UI was based off of NGUI. Now, NGUI is a WYSIWYG editor, which stands for what you see is what you get. So you build your UI out of game objects in the scene, and that's pretty much how it's going to show up in the game view. NGUI has pretty good tools for managing your UI elements, but it's separate from Unity's 2D pipeline, so no sprites, no using images or anything like that. Instead, it uses something called atlases for sprites and for fonts. If you don't know what an atlas is, it's basically a way to save draw calls by packing all of the images used by your UI into one texture, and then instead of having to always load sprites, you know, from the file, you just look up the coordinates for a sprite, which is way less overhead than having to load the files themselves. The downside being that you have to manage atlases, and if you're using NGUI, I hope you really like managing atlases because you're gonna have a lot of them. But it's tools for creating atlases and all that stuff work pretty well. They're pretty easy to pick up. As far as text goes, Angui has two options. It has bitmap fonts. So you bake an atlas for fonts, and then when they show up in game, they're pretty crisp. They look pretty good. Angui also supports dynamic font support. Dynamic fonts tend to be better for languages with lots of characters like Japanese, but generally they look worse. At least the last time I used Angui, when we switched to using dynamic fonts, Angui gave us a big warning saying, hey, we don't really want to support dynamic fonts, so use at your own risk. The next option is Unity's official solution, Unity UI. This used to be called UGUI, but they decided to switch it to a name that's ungoogleable, Unity UI. It's adapted from and well integrated with Unity's 2D tools. It's also a WYSIWYG. The big difference between Unity UI and Angui, or at least one of them, is that it utilizes dynamic batching instead of static atlases. So dynamic batching is basically Unity will take a look at all the elements that are being used, all the sprites that are being used in your UI at any given time, and it will dynamically put them in an atlas so that you don't have to manage atlases beforehand. And then also there's the advantage of your atlases aren't going to contain sprites that aren't being used. The downside is that it's constantly updating these, and so there's a little bit more overhead. Finally, as far as text, Unity UI has dynamic font support only, but their text component is pretty good. I'll go more into text a little bit later. Next is something I actually haven't used that much, but it's pretty well known in the industry. It's called Scaleform. It's the most commonly used UI framework in games. There are thousands of games that use it. It's more expensive, but very, very fully featured, and the tools are pretty great for it. It's Flash-based, and I think it has a Unity SDK. There used to be one in the asset store, but who knows where it went. I think it's hidden behind some sort of developer portal now on the Autodesk website, and I couldn't quite get to the point where I could test it out and show it off. When you're building UIs in Scaleform, you're authoring them outside of Unity in Adobe Creative Suite. You're using ActionScript for some of your logic. One of the good things about Scaleform is that it supports vector graphics out of the box. So if your UI is going to be using lots of vectors, which are infinitely scalable sort of shapes and sprites, then Scaleform might be something worth considering. The next option is Coherent UI. It's an HTML, CSS, JavaScript-based UI framework where you author UIs outside Unity and your favorite HTML, CSS, JavaScript editor. This is really expensive, but jam-packed with all kinds of cool features. It's worth checking out, especially if you have lots of experience building websites. At the end of the day, it's so costly that you really have to be good at HTML, CSS, and JavaScript to want to use it. So all of these UIs are UI frameworks are pretty good. So why use Unity's? Well, first off, it's free, like free with a capital F, $0. Whereas, you know, like I mentioned, Coherent UI costs a couple thousand. You know, Scaleform isn't cheap, and even Angui, which is the closest, arguably to Unity UI, is $90 per seat. So if you're doing things by the book, you need to have a $90 license for every single developer who's working inside Unity, which can quickly add up. Second, it's open source. The source is up on Bitbucket. Anybody can pull it down, meaning there's an opportunity to customize it if you ever run into a situation where something doesn't meet your needs or doesn't work exactly the way that you expect. Open source contributions seem to be pretty common. But even the ones that don't make it back into the source are available as community tweaks. And those can be a real big lifesaver. Next, because it's the official solution, Unity has an entire team of engineers and designers working on it and maintaining it. they have a vested interest in developing new stuff for it, keeping the bugs at bay, and they have the manpower to do it. Now, NGUI is made by one guy. He's a good guy, but you know, he's only one person. Coherent and Scaleform are smaller teams where their Unity integration seems to be lower on the priority list because it's not, you know, their primary cash cow or even the primary feature of their platform. Next, Unity UI is just better integrated in the editor, like even at the C++ level. So performance is going to be better. And just the fact that building UI in engine and iterating inside Unity is just way better than building it outside. You know, as long as the tools are good enough, you can iterate quickly. It's way better than constantly alt-tabbing, having to hit play to see what the changes to your UI. Plus, because your UI is just a bunch of game objects with components stored in Unity scenes using assets stored in your Unity project, pretty much any editor extension that you buy is going to work with it. That helps you manage those assets. So now I want to take a dive into Unity and let's build some. Okay, so here I am in the standard assets in the rollerball scene. This is available in the asset store. There's lots of other stuff in here. I recommend it, especially if you're new to Unity. So I've decided that I want to make a main menu, and I want to have it sort of be based on a 3D background here where I'm looking at this ball, and there's going to be like title text up here, and I'm going to have a couple buttons down here, at least a new game button. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to click on Create UI Canvas. You can see that created a new object here. If I switch into 2D mode, there's a little button up here in the scene view, and then click on my canvas and press F, that will focus in on my canvas. You can see it's a sort of enormous big rectangle in the game world. This can be a little off-putting, but don't worry, it's not going to be rendered by any of your 3D cameras, at least by default. The first thing I want to point out is that this is not resizable. That's because canvas is by default stretched to fill the size of the screen. So if I make this bigger, you can see it's actually getting bigger in world space. If I make this smaller, it gets smaller. So the canvas is the root of your UI. UI elements must be underneath a canvas, at least one canvas, to be rendered. If they're not underneath the canvas, they're not going to show up. So let's go ahead and go in here and start adding some things. To save time, I've sort of pre-built a lot of this. But so here's a little text component. Hold my parent here. Text component. So, you know, let's set a button for new game. Got a nice little background. So I want to point out real quick that the order in the hierarchy here actually matters as far as sorting. The higher something is in the hierarchy, the closer to the bottom it is. It's a little backwards. Conversely, the lower something is in the hierarchy, the closer to the top it's going to be as far as sorting order goes. So if I add another button here, a red button, you'll see that it's lower in the hierarchy, but it's on top of the white button. And if I switch the buttons like so, they'll switch orders in the sorting. Let me move this over real quick so I can see chat. All right. Now, this sort of enforced hierarchy sorting is a little bit weird. It works for most cases, but if you do run into a situation where you need to work around and not use this sorting order, you can actually use canvases to fix this. So here I have two canvases, one for the white button, one for the red button. You can go in and you can, in the inspector, check this override sorting box on both of the canvases, and then you can manually set the sort order there. So some other commonly used UI elements, like kind of spitball this here. You've got your text component, which I showed here. It's pretty standard. It has support for dynamic fonts. You can switch the font out. You can change the font style, but I recommend instead actually baking using the different stylized TrueType font files instead of using this option. If I make it bold, it just gets a little bit weird instead of actually being bold. You've got all your other standard options, alignment, overflow handling, what happens if this gets too big. In this case, it's going to truncate it. But if we want the overflow, we can do that. Text component overall is going to handle most of your cases. It's pretty good. But one thing that really bugs me about it is that if you end up getting close to your text, I'll make this white so it's easier to see. You see something really gross, and that's pixelation. Which brings me to my first recommended add-on, Text Mesh Pro. So the text and font management tools in Angular and Unity UI are cool and all, but they leave a little bit to be desired. Again, they support most of the basic sort of things that you'd want, but you will eventually find a case where they don't support something you want. Plus, like I just showed, they're flawed inherently in the way that they render text. Instead, Text Mesh Pro uses something called Sign Distance Field Rendering. It's the same technique used by Valve to render their text. It results in really crisp, really clean text at any angle, at any distance. In NGUI, you have the option to bake your fonts as large as possible, but it takes up a lot of memory. And even then, if you get up close or present the text at any type of angle, pixelation shows up. You're going to notice this problem a lot more in text labels that are rendered in a 3D world space instead of screen space, because players can often find a way to get up close and personal with the text. And finally, Text Mesh Pro is great just because it has all kinds of options as far as stylization, or I guess style. Definitely recommend that you check it out. So let's hop back in and cover some of the other components very quickly. Underneath text, you've got your image. This is what you'll use for your sprites and other visual elements. Here I can select sprite. Set your color, do all kinds of basic stuff you expect to be able to do. I'm not going to cover all of these, but you are welcome to go and explore them. There's plenty of learning material out there. Some more complex elements like sliders, that sort of thing. All right, so now that we've covered the basics, let's go start talking about architecture. Now, architecture and maintainability are pretty hard to get right in UI, so that when you run into this situation where you have no memory of this thing that you think you worked on at some point in time, you know, it's not like putting out a fire. You might have bad architecture in your project if things are really fragile. You know, fights break out on your team when requirements change because it's so hard to make a change to something without breaking everything else. Your project might have bad architecture if, you know, it feels really wet. Wet stands for write everything twice, or we enjoy typing, or waste everybody's time. You might have a wet project if deja vu is a common sensation when browsing through your project or code base, where the solution to a problem is rewritten or re-implemented differently every time it comes up, or many similar things are implemented different ways. Or you see lots of straight-up copy-paste in multiple places in your code. This is really common. You know, I'm guilty of it. You're probably guilty of it, especially when you're under harsh timelines or, you know, don't have enough time to properly work on something. Speaking of things that suffer due to harsh timelines, tests. For a long time, I used to think that testing stuff in Unity is too hard, you know, so I didn't do it. But really, our bad architecture was what made it hard. For example, it's hard to test UIs and the logic behind them when they're so tightly coupled with other systems, other parts of your scene or other parts of your game. Finally, code smell. This is a term that usually just describes code, but I think after all the stuff I've seen, at least, it can be fairly extended to the rest of a Unity project as well. It's that icky feeling you get when you're working on something. So, you know, you might have bad architecture if you have a prefab smell, if you feel icky when looking at your scene or, you know, going through your project. So let's spend a couple minutes looking at ways to build UI smarter. I'll dive back into Unity here. Yes, the opposite of wet is dry. Don't repeat yourself. It's much, much, much better. So let's distill it back down to the initial vision. Let's go to this slider. Very minimalist, looks pretty good. The first thing I'm going to recommend is organizing your various complete views underneath panels. Panels in Unity UI are just a container, sometimes with an image. So here I've got a panel, which is a collection of main menu things. It contains my text and it contains my button. And the panel itself is also my background image. Now, you'll notice that I'm sort of just creating all these objects and they're not really prefabs at all. So what happens if I want to add two buttons, or maybe I add 10 buttons, I get pretty far down the line of building this UI, and then I decide that I want to change the color. So, I mean, you could go here and select all of them and multi-edit and kind of, you know, change the color like that, but that's kind of hard to do if, say, you have, you know, 40 elements that you want to all change the color of. You probably know this, but the solution is to use prefabs. You don't want to make the same changes to similar UI elements. Break data real quick. Prefabs let you avoid making similar changes to the same UI elements. So look, if I go in here and switch this back to like that, and I hit apply, it's going to propagate to the other buttons that share the same prefab, like so. Unfortunately, you know, it gets kind of hard to manage the changes that you've made in the instance of a scene to UI elements. It can be really tedious, so here I'm going to go and I'm going to change the text to settings. This should actually be the new game button. Game, and I want this to be social because our boss thinks that it's awesome. Looking good, but then I decide that, well, I want my new game button to use a different font. I want to emphasize new game, so we're going to use a little bit of a bold font. It's looking pretty good. And then I want to change the color settings to be a little bit less on the alpha. You know, whatever. You're making lots of changes like this. You're working for a while. You know, everything's based on prefab, so it's fine. But then you want to make a change that applies to all the buttons. Like, say, we decide that all the buttons need to use a different sprite again. You know, no problem. We'll just go in here, change the sprite back, and then go and hit apply. So what do you think is going to happen when I hit apply? I mean, honestly, I'm not even sure I can tell you right now because we've made so many local changes to these prefabs. I think it's going to change everything. Oh, but look, it also applied my font change to the other labels as well. So this is messy. You can manage it better by, instead of editing things in the scene, or at least making changes in the scene that you want applied to everything, you can go and you can find the base prefab and you can make the changes there in the project view. It's a lot better and easier to be editing things in the scene and see changes made live. Instead of this, instead of just having everything based on one prefab, I want to introduce a new concept called prefab inheritance and nested prefabs. So here we are with the same view, but everything is prefabified, as you can see here, but there's a new icon that you'll notice right away. If I click on these and go up here to the top of the inspector, you'll see there are two prefab references here. There's a reference to this prefab. You see it down on the bottom right in my project view, and then also to its parent. So I've made a new base prefab as the parent of the main menu buttons. This is true for the settings button as well. It's based off of a common parent. And then I have two new social buttons, which are also main menu buttons, but their parent is a social base button. And then if I look at that parent, it's that main menu base button. So anyway, I've got this sort of inheritance tree for buttons now in my main menu. And the reason that I'm doing this is twofold. One, I want to better encapsulate the different versions of these buttons and capture them at the prefab level. This new game button, as far as Unity is concerned, is its own separate prefab. It's not related at all to a base main menu button. But if I go in here and I edit something on the main menu base prefab, then it will apply, when I hit apply, to every single prefab that inherits from this base prefab. Takes a little bit longer because it parses through your entire project, finds everything that's dependent, and makes the change. At the same time, here with our social buttons, I'm free to make specific changes, like, you know, change the sprite icon or whatever. And then I can just hit apply and save it out, and that won't affect any other button by itself. But if I want to make a change to both social buttons, like say I want to add a component, let's just add some scripts. There's a new script. We're adding it to the base down here. Apply. And if we look in our scene, we'll see that it's been applied. This is essential add-on number two for me, prefab evolution. UI elements, as a sort of a best practice, work best as prefabs, but also your encapsulating UI views should be UI prefabs as well. But in vanilla Unity, it's hard to have both without getting fancy. What we've done in the past is we instantiate prefab views or elements at runtime. But the strength of Unity UI is that it's a what you see is what you get editor. So if you're able to use something like prefab inheritance, it lets you follow the what you see is what you get editor workflow without having to do anything fancy. So the tool that I'm using to do this is called Prefab Evolution. It's like $25 on the asset store. Prefab nesting allows you to keep track of prefabs inside of other prefabs, something I failed to show you, so I will. I see a question. Is prefab inheritance built into Unity, or is it an add-on? It's an add-on. It's called Prefab Evolution, and it's available on the asset store. So a good practice is each of these is a UI element. Each of these should be a prefab. But we have a panel, which is a representation of a whole view. This should also be a prefab. So you'll notice if we go like this and make it a prefab, what prefab evolution does is it keeps track of these elements in here. It knows that they have a reference to a different Unity prefab in the project. As far as Unity is concerned, this is all just one prefab. If you did this without prefab evolution, these would actually lose the reference to their base prefab. And then if you made changes to them, they wouldn't, or if you made changes to the base prefab, say like in the project, changes made here would not propagate to here. Kind of a weird sort of, I guess, more advanced idea, but since I started using this in the UIs that I've been building, it's completely revolutionized the way that I work. If I duplicate this panel, or let's say I even build a new one, do that real quick. Add another panel, move it over here. We're gonna have our settings menu. Gonna go ahead and go to my main menu base. I'm gonna drag it in here to my new panel. There it is right there. I'm gonna create a new child button for use in the settings menu. Go like this. I'm gonna create a child. So this is going to create an entirely new prefab. If you look down here in my project view, boom, there it is. I'm going to call this settings item. Then if I drag it back into my panel like so, and reset the funky positioning, boom, it's back. So this is my panel for settings. Let's get my settings page. And this is my panel for main menu. I want this to be one prefab, and I want my panel for settings to be another prefab. So I've done that, and again, you can see that prefab evolution is keeping track of my the instances of the prefabs in here that are nested. So to demonstrate again, if I go to the button main menu base and I make a change to it, my boss decides that red's not our color, and then hit apply, it'll go and propagate to all of these in here inside this prefab. And it'll propagate to all of the prefabs that inherit from the base in here in a different prefab. Now, I made the mistake of doing this demo in a project that uses the standard assets. So there are already a lot of prefabs in here. So prefab evolution takes a long time to parse through all of them and make updates. If you're in a project where you have lots and lots and lots of prefabs, it's going to increase the time that prefab evolution needs. Why do you create a new panel slash prefab for settings? Couldn't it be in the same main menu panel? It could. One reason to do this is if this is going to be like a separate entire view. So let's say we click on this button down here that says settings. We can animate this view in and hide the one before it. The reason for dividing things into panels is to make it easier at a glance to see how things are arranged and what purpose your UI elements are serving. This also extends to naming for me. Naming's very subjective. I know a lot of people cringe when they see spaces in my game object names. But my preference and the preference that I try to pass on to my teams is to name your elements based off of the type of element that they are first, and then the purpose that they serve. So for example, panel main menu, button main menu, and then if I'm following my standard here, this would be text, new game. When you have really complex UIs with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of elements, this helps to make it easier to find what you want to work on. All right, let's dive back in here to our presentation. All right, so in addition to using prefabs, it's worth considering using standards and patterns. You know, one of the standards that I mentioned was naming. You know, pick a standard for naming things and stick to it. Be as consistent as possible. Another standard is the way that you organize your logic that's driving your UI. And one sort of framework I recommend is MVC, which stands for Model View Controller. It's a scalable way, a templatable way to separate data and logic, which is your model, from all the sort of input handling, which is in the controller, and then the presentation of the UI elements, the view. So all of those things that we were just building, those could be considered the view. They're not yet doing anything really with input handling or even logic. We didn't add anything about, you know, what happens when you press the new game button. Another sort of pattern that I recommend considering is called IOC, which stands for inversion of control. How many of you have used singletons before in your Unity projects? If you're like me, you abuse the crap out of singletons because they're really easy. You can just, in your code, type, you know, thing I want dot instance dot give me what I need. The problem with this is it creates a direct coupling between your UI element that needs that reference and the thing that's providing that reference. So in the scene, for example, well, the other option, you know, besides singletons is having, you know, say we have a script on this main menu and it has a public field or a serialized field that says give me the manager for me, and it's some object and helpers like menu loader here. We'd have to drag the reference into this UI element. That's terrible because suddenly there's a reference between this object and this object, and that's going to be tracked in your scene, which means that your scenes are going to be checked out. You're going to have scene-specific changes. The better alternative is the singleton, where you can have a script on your main menu panel, and you can say, hey, menu loader dot instance, give me your thing, give me your instance. The problem with that in code is, one, it can make it harder to test the way that the main menu is using, the main menu panel is using the reference to, say, the menu loader. Because to test it, you need an actual reference to the main menu loader. One of the strengths of inversion of control is that it's really easy to inject a mock dependency, a mock version of, you know, whatever it would normally use. So singletons are all right. They work well for some things, but inversion of control is sort of like a whole new level where things, when they have a dependency on something, when they go to use that dependency, IOC will help you make sure that it's the dependencies are created. All right, so that is the extent of my talk so far, but I wanted to take this opportunity to say thanks. If you have more specific questions, I saw someone mention animations, for example. you are free to email me if you can't find a learning resource about it out there. Also, you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. All right, so I mentioned that one of my stretch goals was to cover anchoring, and it looks like I do have time to address it. Yeah, I've got a couple of minutes. So your question is, any tips for making one UI for desktop and mobile? Desktop users are complaining that the UI is too big. So let's jump into here. Right now we're making this game, we're making this UI for mobile, right? Let me get rid of my extra panel. Already you can see if I scale this, like let's say we're playing on a big Windows phone, my buttons are kind of anchored in a weird position. So Unity UI has some tools. You might be familiar with them. If you're not, there's lots of learning resources out there for learning about anchoring. And instead of going into how to use this in depth, instead I want to show you an add-on that I use that's been completely revolutionary. Because one of the problems is that, say if we want to switch to 1080p resolution here. All right. It's hard to make your game view big enough to properly properly render at the right resolution. And so there's a solution to this called XARM. It stands for Advanced Resolution Monitor. I'll just load it. So how XARM works is it will unanchor your game view. You can put it off to a side on another screen. And then you can anchor XARM preview in place. You go into the options and you tell it, hey, I'm working on these platforms. We scroll to the bottom. I'm working on iOS. I'm working on the 6 Plus, and I'm working on the iPad Mini, and then on standalone, I need to support people who are playing on Steam boxes and their 40-inch TVs, and then I want to support the top maybe 30% of resolutions that are used in standalone platform. I'm sure many of you are just amazed at this so far. I know I was. All right, we close this, and then up here where normally you'd see the option to the name of this add-on is XARM. Stands for Aspect Ratio Manager. I'll look it up real quick. Go on sale right now for $35. It's a really good deal. It's basically an editor extension tool that gives you an easy way to emulate both resolutions and actual physical pixel size. So you can put in the DPI of your monitor and preview the physical size of, say, the iPad. I'll go in here, add another window from XARM. Go to XARM Gallery. Yep, you already said that. I'm going to anchor this at the bottom. I'm going to zoom out. So on the bottom here, you can see a preview of all my game views. Now this is the part where it's going to break because I'm demoing this live. There we go. Okay. Oh, I know what's happening. So I have to switch my game view and put it in free aspect, and that will fix the problem. All right, so down here, I can switch between all of these different resolutions at a click, and it will render pixel perfect. It'll basically set the game view to be the exact size This is really, really valuable when testing between different platforms. So here we have iPhone 5 horizontal. And let's see which one that's drastically different. Here's a 17-inch screen in 4:3. If you're having troubles getting your UIs to properly scale down, like you mentioned, let's see here. You said desktop users are complaining that the UI is too big. Go into XArm and start messing around with different configurations like this. And then you can figure out the best way. There is a point that you'll get to where instead of trying to set up really advanced anchoring configurations that work on every platform, it's better to just make different versions of the UI for different platforms. So we might have one version of this main menu for PC. We might have another version for mobile. And that actually gets easier when you have all of your UI elements contained in prefabs like this. You know, this could be our panel, main menu, desktop. Duplicate it and make this the panel, main menu, mobile. Save this out as a separate prefab. And then just try to have logic that figures out what platform we're on and then turns them on or off. And then if we make, you know, common changes to these elements, they'll still be propagated to both versions. All right, let me scroll up and see some of the other questions. Here, can you make different layouts based on resolutions orientations? I think I'm running out of time to actually go through and do that, especially because this main menu is all centered. It's not interesting enough to really show it off. But XArm will make it a lot easier for you to manage that in your specific UIs. I am heavily using Unity UI. Do you have any quick tips for better performance with a lot of UI on the screen? One thing you can try and do is make sure that all of your buttons are using sort of the same sprite. It really depends on your bottleneck. You can see here that, you know, these are sprites. This is a button, and it's using a sprite that's sliced. This probably doesn't even need to be this big. You can reduce the size of your sprites this way by making sure that they're sliced and reducing the size that's being used. I guess it depends on what your bottleneck is. When tackling optimization like draw call batching, do you like to make your own sprite atlases or use the Unity Sprite Packer? Well, I mean, when I'm using NGUI, you don't have a choice. You have to use their Sprite Atlas Maker. NGUI's Atlas Maker is okay. You do have a little bit more control over draw call management, but I like dynamic batching more because it handles it better, and then I don't ever have to touch an atlas. I haven't actually used Unity Sprite Packer for anything UI related yet. Next question is, when working on desktop UIs, do you recommend a particular aspect ratio to start with, or do you jump between different screen sizes? I'm always jumping between them, depending on what I'm working on. If I'm working on a centered UI, such as this one, where, most UIs aren't going to be perfectly centered like this. But yeah, I normally have XArm up in another window, and I have it update in editor mode. And then I'm constantly kind of going like this, saying, all right, what does that look like on a 40-inch TV? And then if I go over to my game view, this will be scaled to be the same size as a 40-inch TV, at least normally. Next question is, tips for UI in VR. You want to make sure that you're not having sort of screen space UIs. Like even this main menu probably wouldn't work. It wouldn't be a good experience in VR. You know, the camera is anchored to your headset. And as you're moving at your head, you know, it's weird if there's this UI kind of stuck to your face. That's what it feels like. So you, in VR, you're going to see a lot more need for world space UIs, just so you guys are aware. Unity UI supports world space UIs through world space canvases. So every canvas has a render mode. Overlays on the top of the screen. Camera lets you render to a specific camera. And world space renders it in 3D space itself. So if we did this, we could then scale this down to some stupidly small size. And then we could place it in a specific spot in world space. And so what you'll do is you'll scale these down and you'll put these somewhere in your VR scene in a place that they're accessible and readable to your user. It's a lot easier if you're in room scale VR. It's kind of cool designing UIs for room scale VR. But if you're not, it needs to be close enough, or there needs to be some mechanic where when they look at it, it gets closer to them so that they can read it. VR is another case where it's important. Well, I guess it's not important, but you're going to run into issues where text becomes really pixelated because you can get super close. Unity UI has poor support for keyboard/gamepad navigation and scroll views. Have you run into this, and do you have any tips? Let me move this here so I'm facing you guys. I have not run into this yet with scroll views. There's some wonkiness because I've been developing on Mac for the last year. Mac trackpads handle a little bit differently. But as far as tips go, I know that people are constantly releasing updates to, let me switch back to screen base here. There's a component in Unity UI's event system called the event layer. Or maybe it's just called event system. When you create a canvas, it creates an event system, and the event system has these sort of input modules. I'm not actually sure off the top of my head if scrolling in a scroll view is handled in here, but this is an example of where I've actually had input problems before, and we solved it by modifying the input module. Basically, we essentially copy-pasted it, got rid of this one on this component, and then added our own custom one. I'm wondering if your solution could be solved there. All right, next question, and probably one of our last ones, is does Text Mesh Pro work in VR as well? I believe so. I think it does. I don't see why it wouldn't. There's nothing about it in my mind that would cause problems. Maybe the science distance field shader could have problems. I have not used it in VR yet. So I'm not sure. All right, any other questions? All right, well, thank you all so much. It's been a pleasure giving this talk. Sorry it was a little bit rough. Again, if you guys have any questions, please feel free to contact me on Twitter or on email. Thanks, guys.